Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to The Favorites, the podcast from the Action Network. I am Chad Millman. Listen, week one of college football is coming up, and we have an amazing guest later on in the show. Connor O'Gara, at CJ O'Gara on Twitter. He is a columnist for Saturday Down South. He's got great insight into betting the week one games since he's been covering this thing nonstop and is all over it for SaturdayDownSouth.com. But first up, as always, bookmaker of the world from Boyd Gaming. Here he comes, Mr. Bob Scucci. My brother.
Chad, what's going on?
Scooch, week one of college football is here. I feel like college football is getting bigger and bigger every year. And I know that sort of sounds weird. Like, why do you feel that way when this sport has been a massively popular sport for 150 years? But here's the truth. The ratings for that Miami-Florida game were massive. Our numbers on the first Saturday of college football were massive. They were rivaling what we had done during March Madness, which are the biggest days we've ever had. I would bet that the activity in your sports book for basically two prime college football games was extraordinary. And my take is that betting has a lot to do with it. What do you think?
I think absolutely. I think, you know, now that sports books are up and running in eight different states, the mass appeal is starting to really take effect in both betting and viewership, I think. You know, there's always been the relationship between betting and watching, you know, particularly if there's a team that's supposed to win by 20 or 30 points, unless there's kind of a rooting interest from a betting perspective, you know, what else is there to kind of keep you captivated watching that game? So I think the viewership is directly related to betting, and I think both are going to be getting bigger and bigger in the next 2 years.
So let's talk about that Miami versus Florida game. The total on that game was anywhere from, I think, as low as 45 or 46 all the way up to maybe 50. And the final score was 24-20. And in the last 3 minutes, there was a litany of pass interference calls, fumbles that were recovered by Miami, all these things that, from the perspective of underbettors, probably had them feeling like there is already some kind of karmic conspiracy against them. Like the gods just did not want that game to go under. Side of the game were the books on? And tell me how you were feeling during that game at the end.
So the books needed the favorite. We needed Florida. We opened the game, I think we were as high as 8 at one point. We closed at 7. A lot of money coming in on Miami. And I actually like the underdog in that game, just from keeping track of a local kid, Tate Martell, Martell Tate, or whatever, the kid from local high school here that is on the team. I knew that they would be a live dog in that game. So we didn't need Miami, but obviously they played a great game. From the under perspective, we needed it to stay under. So that worked in our favor. I think just most of the public were on the over. Some of the sharp bettors were on the under. But, you know, the way that the game ended, I mean, obviously there was a lot of penalties throughout the game. I think Miami played a little bit of a sloppy game from the penalty perspective of it. You know, from someone watching sports from a betting angle for all these years, it's nothing uncommon to me to see that kind of effect. Like, in other words, you're rooting for a particular over or under, and you think that there's something going on to prevent it from hitting that number. It's just the way it goes. There's nobody orchestrating that. So let me just kind of clear that up right away. I've seen a lot of games that you think are, you know, it can't possibly go this way, and it does. But in the sports book, people were just kind of like, it was pretty loud, cheering on every play, because half the room had the over, the other half had the under. So I think it's exciting when it's kind of sitting right at the number like that, and the team's right in the red zone, and that kind of puts the game over and it affects the money line. It couldn't have started with a better game to open the college football season.
You do forget, it's almost like a muscle, like you got to work out, how different the feeling is when you are sweating a football game versus anything else. It is a different pace. There's a different dramatic note to the rhythm of watching football and sort of how everything builds up to sort of a climax that is just a couple seconds long. I don't mean a double entendre there. And because it is like you don't feel that way when you're sweating a basketball game or sweating a baseball game as you do when you're sweating a football game. You just don't. It's like, it's an entirely different muscle.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, there's so much drama in football, partially because, like you said, the pace of the game, you know, you're leading up to the particular play, so the drama is kind of enhancing. You don't get that in basketball because it's so fluid. It's back and forth. You only get it in basketball at the end, you know, the last 20 seconds of the game when there's a lot of timeouts and you're kind of building up to that last shot. But in football, you get so much drama on key plays during the game, you know, those third down plays that kind of make or break whether your team is going to cover. So like I said, it's exciting to see it back after a long off season and sweating a lot of baseball games. It's great to get back in the football swing of things.
Meanwhile, in the middle of all that, Adam Schefter tweets out that Andrew Luck is retiring, forces Andrew Luck to up the schedule for when he was going to release that news and go from Sunday to Saturday night. I know with the Action Network, we were immediately in Slack trading messages. What does this do to the future odds? What does this do to the division odds? What does this do to the win totals? How are we updating the fantasy projections and models? What is that moment like for you in a sports book when a high profile player like Andrew Luck is unexpectedly announcing his retirement?
It's 0 to 60 in like, you know, 2 seconds. You're trying to scramble to find out everything that impacts that his retiring impacts that you have on the betting board. So right away, we try to suspend betting on game one, the preseason game, game one of the regular season, odds to win the division, odds to win the AFC, odds to win the Super Bowl, and any other props that are associated with it. So, you know, we'll eventually adjust. So we went from the season win total from 9.5 down to 7.5. We moved their future odds in the AFC from 25 to 1 to from 6 to 1 up to 50 to 1, and then the odds to win the Super Bowl we went from 25 to 1 to 250 to 1. So, you know, everything is just fast and furious, and you have to move quickly before all the bets come in. And, you know, he's not the only one. And I've often said, you know, we kind of like the stock market. You buy on the rumor and you sell on the news. The bettors are going to take a chance as soon as they hear something, whether it's actual or not. You know, they take a shot on betting on the rumor. And then if it turns out to be true, then they could either try and get off the bet or kind of hedge in some way. So we have to be really quick, because as soon as we hear the rumor, we take the betting off until we kind of assess the situation.
And so how long before you down, and then when did you go back up?
So as soon as we knew that it was for real, you know, that he was definitely retiring, that this was not just kind of lip service, then we went up as soon as the the next day as soon as we knew that it was for real. And then we adjusted everything. We adjusted the division odds, the FC odds. We went in game one, the Chargers were a 3-point favorite. They're now a 7-point favorite without Luck. So made a lot of adjustments very quickly. And then, you know, in other instances, you know, where like Cam Newton was in a walking boot, you know, we do the same thing there. And then we adjust. And, you know, it's just constantly you have to pay attention. You have to look at as many sources as you can to see what's real and what's kind of expected.
I feel like you didn't adjust enough. A lot of other books went from 9.5 down to 6.5 on the Colts.
That we didn't adjust enough. Yeah. So I mean, we'll let the money dictate it. But right now at 7.5, we're still getting, we're not getting any big bets, but we probably should adjust a little bit more. I guess we'll see how they look in their final game with I don't know if Jacoby Brissett's going to get any playing time, but they've got to make some moves quick.
I think you're going to find that I'm right, and I think you're going to find that from now on you probably should call me before you make any big high-profile moves, because I'm very attuned to the consumer markets when it comes to betting.
Well, the reality is the Colts had a really good team. Now, obviously, Luck is a big part of that. And I don't mean that as a pun, some of the conversation was, you know, should Luck go through rehab half the season with the understanding that Brissett could probably take them to a 4-4 record going into the latter half of the season. So, you know, if he's expected to get 4 wins just the first half of the season, you know, it's not a big stretch that he could eke out, you know, another 3. So, I don't know. I'm kind of talking myself out of what my number is. So I'm kind of leaning towards going under the 7.5. So as always, Chad, you are right.
You know, also with your pun, you have made this the most literate betting podcast in the history of betting podcasts.
The most literate podcast. Okay.
That, by the way, that'll get us some listeners. The favorites.
Sure.
The most literate betting podcast in town.
I like it.
That'll amp up the numbers. Hey, listen, by the way, don't forget people, Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South is coming on next. He's going to talk a lot about this weekend's week one for college football, the bets that he likes the most, the team outside of the most obvious college football playoff favorites that he would put his money on, the top 25 that he thinks is the best value this weekend, and if he had to choose between the two biggest favorites to bet this weekend, Clemson at -37.5 over Georgia Tech or Penn State -39 over Idaho, who would you choose to bet on if you had to bet one of the favorites? Connor's going to answer all those questions. Scooch, who would you bet? Who would you bet if you had to bet Penn State -39 or Clemson -37.5?
I'm taking Clemson.
How come?
Against Georgia Tech? How come? Well, you know, you're just throwing it at me. So,
I'm asking you to take, why are you taking Clemson as the biggest favorite? These were the two biggest favorites in the top 25. So why would you take Clemson instead of Penn State?
More confidence in who would run up a score more, out of those two teams. And I think it would just be Clemson that would be able to put up, you know, 50, 60 points, knowing what their offense is capable of. And I just have more confidence that in Clemson's offense than Penn State's that they're going to put up like a 50 or 60 spot.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I also don't like the fact that Georgia Tech is basically trying to build a brand new offense right now. And then they got to open the season against one of the generationally great college football teams against a quarterback who might end up winning the Heisman this year and in the year after winning a national title as a freshman, and will probably end up his career as like as storied as Paul Hornung. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just came up with that. I didn't need the time.
You just off the top of your head, just rattle it off.
Give me the five games right now that the wise guys are betting the most as we head into week one.
A little bit on Texas over Louisiana Tech. Got some big money there.
What's the number? Texas over La Tech.
Yeah, so we went from 19.5 up to 21.5. Missouri over Wyoming, big move there. The number went from 14.5 up to 17.5. So a lot of money on Missouri there.
Do you feel like 3 points in college football between a team that is, you know, SEC, even if it's Mizzou, that isn't going to do anything special this offseason or this postseason versus Wyoming, you think 3 points is a big move? Like, what makes that a big move to you?
Well, I will say in college football that 3-point moves are more the norm than they ever used to be.
Yeah, so, that's what
so,
I mean.
So absolutely. So if you know that's also why if you look at teaser payouts, a 6-point teaser in college football is a lot more than a 6-point teaser in NFL football for that very reason that the 6 points in the NFL means a lot more. Than it does in college, and so yeah, we are seeing those bigger swings. Style of game, you know, the scoring is up in college football. So there's a number of factors that kind of lessen the value of a 1-point move or 3-point move. So, but we have seen it, have noticed it.
All right, what else you got?
A lot on UCLA against Cincinnati. That's another, that's around the key number. So not a big line move, but just a lot of money on UCLA. Probably the biggest. Wisconsin, we have a lot of money, but, I mean, that's kind of a public game over South Florida.
Yeah.
At minus 12.5. That's probably not sharp money. That's, in fact, we have a couple of sharp bets on South Florida there, but just a ton of money on Wisconsin. And the other one that the wise guys are on where the public is on the opposite team is Oklahoma State, Oregon State. Oklahoma State's minus 13.5 now, and the public is overwhelmingly on Oak State, but the wise guys are on Oregon State. So a lot of money on Oregon State there. And we've gone from 17 down to 14.5 on that one. Or 17 down to 13.5 on that one.
Wow. So,
again, yeah.
Oregon State, one of the worst teams of the past decade, is getting that much money against a high-flying Mike Gundy Oklahoma State Cowboy offense. What's going on there?
Yeah, that one scares me a little bit. I mean, I know Oregon State's going to be a lot better than they have been in previous seasons, but that's not saying much. Getting double digits at home, it's a wise guy play, but to this extent, scares me a little bit. And I don't want to be in a position where I'm just sitting at 13.5 too long because the public is on Oak State. You know, I'll be quick to move this right back up as we draw closer to game time. And that's another thing that we have seen a trend as well. We've seen a lot of these big points swings, but half of them go back to the opening number. So it's kind of deciphering which ones are the real plays and which ones are just kind of trying to manipulate the market.
Someone's trying to, you ready? Are you ready? Oh my God. Talk about literate. Yeah. Here you go. You ready?
Yeah.
Someone's trying to screw the scooch.
That is literal.
You get it? Instead of like screw the pooch?
It's a pun on screw the pooch.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just trying to screw the scooch.
We are so punny.
That's a good one. Well, you're on a roll.
Oh, my God. We better stop. Hey, here's my last question for you. My last question for you before I let you go.
Okay.
We are 72 hours or so away from kickoff for week one, 50 games this weekend. You will then sort of have a really good sense of where you are most vulnerable for the national title. Right now, what team makes you the most vulnerable to win the national title?
It's probably Georgia. You're talking about like in terms of liability and everything?
Yeah.
There was just a lot of money on Georgia. They figure they were the best team to contend with Clemson and Alabama. Notre Dame is right up there, again, just because of their popularity and their national appeal, not so much because from a wise guy perspective, but certainly a lot of people like Georgia.
I'm so glad I asked you that question, Scooch, because not even knowing that was the case, you have given me the perfect transition into our next guest, who is going to talk a lot about why he loves Georgia to win it all, and that would be Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South. Bob Scucci, as always, thank you for coming on your podcast. You're on every week now. Football season starting right. Every week through the end of the year. Bob Scucci's going to be on with me.
All right,
buddy. Thanks, man. As promised, next up on The Favorites, the podcast. It's almost like this guy's my doppelganger. Connor O'Gara at CJ O'Gara, CJOGARA on Twitter. Senior national columnist for SaturdayDownSouth.com, co-host of the Saturday Down South podcast. You know what that means? He knows a lot about college football, especially in the South. And he's from Chicago. He graduated from IU, Indiana University, the only IU, and also got parking tickets parked outside of Ernie Pyle Hall when we both were working at the Indiana Daily Student, separated by mere decades. Connor, thanks for coming on the podcast, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always great to meet an IU alum. I feel like it's such a small world, and at the same time, the alumni base is so massive. Even down here in Orlando, I'll run into Indiana alums every once in a while, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's what happens when you go to a Big Ten school that had like 40,000 enrollment.
So, did you actually go to IU football games? Because I did. I think I was the only person who basically went to every IU football game.
Yeah, I mean, define go to. If go to means go to tailgates, then I mean, yeah, I went to a ton of IU football games. But I went to pretty much every game as a freshman, and then sophomore year that kind of faded, and then junior year I covered the team for the Indiana Daily Student, so I was at every game, and then senior year, yeah, I've got back to my tailgating ways a little bit more so. But yeah, I can't say that I sat there and it became a diehard IU football fan.
So when you were covering college football, is that when you sort of got the bug and you're like, I got to do this full time. I got to find a way to do this for a living. And then I got to find a way to do it in an actual football region, not Indiana.
You know, it's funny you mention that, because back in the day, the way that the hierarchy used to work at a place like Indiana, we cover football so that we can cover basketball, because that's what everybody cares about. And football is kind of the step below the basketball beat. I remember getting to school at IU and being a freshman and signing up to join the newspaper and just thinking to myself, man, if I could just cover the basketball team one day, that would be like made in the shade. And so I covered the football team as a junior, and then was sports editor my second semester that year, and then was fortunate enough to be able to cover basketball. But at the time, I kept thinking to myself, college basketball, I could make a living doing that. And I didn't really have the college football itch. I didn't really grow up with it in the same way that so many people around my area down here did, because I grew up in the northwest suburbs of Chicago, where, you know, my aunt would take me to Northwestern games, or everyone saw it go down to Champaign for an Illinois game. And it's just a totally different atmosphere. So to me, you know, I was raised loving college basketball and in pro sports as well, growing up where I did. So I didn't really get the college football itch actually until after I graduated. I worked out in central Nebraska covering high school sports for a local newspaper. And, you know, one of the things that I did with that is I would make the 2-hour drive every Saturday in the fall to go cover Nebraska football home games. And seeing those, it kind of just took me back. And I was like, wow, this college football really is as crazy as people say it is. And that ultimately is what led to this opportunity that I was able to get with Saturday Down South and Saturday Tradition. So, yeah, in kind of a weird way, I guess that was the beginning of it. But at the time, I was focused on doing college basketball.
Yeah, it's so funny you say that, because I remember I was on the same path. I covered IU women's volleyball. Then I covered IU wrestling. Then I covered IU baseball. And the next gig that I was going to get was IU football. And then I was going to cover IU basketball. And that was like the path, right? And my junior year, instead of staying in school, I went to London. and
oh, wow.
for a semester. And so they didn't, I couldn't cover the basketball team and I couldn't cover the football team. So I missed out on covering IU basketball. I feel like it worked out okay, but that like covering college football or college basketball for your school newspaper is a phenomenal experience and like a phenomenal proving ground. Like you get to learn what it's like to cover something at a really high level for a place that very few people are reading, but everybody is passionate about. And it means a lot to the players. Like you get an outsized amount of attention. You get to deal with what it's like to be criticizing the people that you're covering and have them have to react to that.
Oh, absolutely. And it was just a fantastic way to get started. I always say to people, if you're in the journalism school, that's like, cool, like, great, you're taking classes, that's all well and good. You are the real life, real world job experience, actually being out in the field and doing student newspaper, I think should be a prerequisite for any journalism student, whether you want to do newspaper or not, or, you know, into that field, because I think it just teaches you actually how to write and how to work on deadlines and to get to do so while covering a Big Ten football program and a Big Ten basketball program. It was just such a blessing. And I realized looking back now to be able to do that at, you know, 19, 20, 21 years old, it's such an incredible opportunity. And I'm grateful that I was able to get that opportunity as early as I did.
All right. So let's get down to brass tacks here, because the college football season opens in earnest this weekend, week one. Georgia is one of the most interesting teams to me. And obviously you're writing for Saturday Down South. You're living in the South. They're going to be at the centerpiece of a lot of conversations, generally in the SEC. They've kind of been dominant. And you wrote about this earlier this summer, like what they've done the past two seasons with Kirby Smart. They've won every one of their games by 14 points. Their average margin of victory is 25 points. In 720 total minutes of game time, they've trailed 9.5 minutes. And kudos to Matt Mitchell, producer podcast extraordinaire, for giving me all these stats from your story. So here's the question. Do you bet Georgia not to win the East or Alabama not to make the playoff?
Well, I got Georgia winning the national championship, so where do I fall on that? I think this is the year for Georgia, and I think that Bama makes the playoff as well. I think what ultimately happens, I know that's hedging a little bit, but I think what ultimately happens this year is I think Bama goes into the SEC championship undefeated, just as it did last year. Georgia goes in with one loss, just as it did last year, but this time, I think Georgia is finally able to get over the hump, and I think they're finally able to beat Alabama, and that paves the way. That's the remaining hurdle for them, and I think that they'll ultimately go on to win two games and capture their first national championship since 1980. And now I've gone back and forth on this throughout the offseason, but I just think that sense of urgency is there. I think they have the offensive line where they're going to be able to impose their will against basically every team that they face, maybe with the exception of a team like Auburn. And I'm including Alabama in that group. I think that Auburn defensive line is just as good as it gets in the country. But Georgia's up front is just going to be able to bully people. And I think that once they figure out what those receiving options are, I mean, there's talent there. They got a couple five-star guys, George Pickens. They got another one, Demetrius Robertson, who's a former Cal transfer who's expected to do some big things this year. Once they figure out what those weapons are, I think that this team is really going to take off. And you know, I've been high on Jake Fromm since the first start that he made against Notre Dame 2 years ago. And I think that he is the type of guy that you want leading your team. DeAndre Swift in the backfield is just devastating. I mean, that's the one word that I would use to describe him. And I think he will be in the Heisman Trophy conversation. So, yeah, I am high on Georgia. And that's not to say I'm not high on Bama. I think the revenge tour will go through the SEC. I think it'll be another dominant year in the conference. But I think that Georgia is just going to finally have that thing to get over the hump. And I know people have said that before, but, you know, I was there at the SEC championship last year, and I just saw how close that game really was and how just Georgia had them right where they wanted them. I mean, they really did. And then Jalen Hurts came in and saved the day. So, yeah, I'm willing to put my chips on the dogs this year. I like the odds that they're getting as compared to, you know, Alabama and Clemson, which are the overwhelming favorites, obviously, to win a national championship this year.
All right. So, but you didn't really answer the question because then the answer is you would take Alabama not making the playoff because you wouldn't bet Georgia not winning the East.
Well, I would bet Georgia winning the East. I have Bama making the playoff as a 4 seed.
Okay.
So getting really, really close. And then I have, I don't think Georgia's going to lose a game in the division. I think their only regular season loss would be to Auburn. And then I would have Bama still getting into the playoff, even though they would lose to Georgia at 12-0. I think they would still get the 4 seed, and then they'd be able to beat out, a Washington or an Oklahoma, a team that could win a conference championship with one loss and still not make it in.
All right, so that answers my second question, which is Alabama to go over 11 wins is -160. Stuckey, who is our college football genius, everyone should go download the Action Network College's podcast. Because Stuckey has been predicting all preseason that Alabama will lose at least one, if not two, of the following road games: Texas A&M, at Mississippi State, or at Auburn. So, you clearly have them winning 12 games. You have them getting into the playoffs. Why do you feel that way? Why do you think that they won't succumb on the road to one of those three teams?
Yeah, I just think that it's the Bama Revenge Tour. I mean, I've seen the way that Nick Saban's teams respond to losing in the playoff or losing a bowl game. When Nick Saban's teams have come back after losing a bowl game, he has won a national championship in 4 of those 5 years. And I realized that me not having Bama to win a national championship was like, well, why don't you? But I just think Georgia's going to have that advantage, and I think that Bama is ultimately going to lose in the playoff to Clemson. But you know, I don't think that Bama is going to lose one of those road games. I think last year, watching what they were able to do, we talk about how easy the schedule was for Bama last year. At the same time, though, let's not forget that they went into LSU and won that game 29-0. I mean, that atmosphere was hostile. It was a top three LSU team, and Bama went in there and just smacked them back to reality. I think that A&M is an interesting matchup. I almost wanted to pull the trigger on that because I think Kellen Mond really is able to play to his competition. We saw that last year with what he did against that really good Clemson defensive line. I think he's actually played pretty well against Bama the last couple years, and I don't think he's going to be intimidated by that. I think A&M has an interesting matchup in the trenches, but I still have Bama winning that game. I still have them beating a really solid Mississippi State team this year as well. I understand that game was really close a couple years ago. One of Jalen Hurts' best performances that people kind of forget about, he staged a comeback there in Starkville to be able to pull off that victory back in 2017. And, yeah, I think that they go into Jordan-Hare this year, and I think they beat Auburn. I think that Tua stretches that defense in a way that it's not necessarily going to be prepared to defend, and I think that Bama completes another 12-0 regular season. Although, you know, those games, it wouldn't absolutely stun me if one of those teams won, but I'm just not predicting at this point.
How inflated do you think Alabama is as a favorite in every single game? How much do you think bookmakers account for the public perception that Alabama, no matter where they're playing, is going to be the team that gets all the money?
Well, I mean, I think they account for it a lot, and I think they actually accounted for it a little bit too much in this first game. This line started at what, 30.5 or 30, and now it's at like 34.5 against Duke. And, you know, I'll be there on Saturday, and I actually just finished writing a column basically saying like, hey, you know, as much as I think Bama is going to dominate in the opener, I know that Saban has won 12 openers by an average of 28.8 points, and they've just blown the water out of so many Power 5 teams to start the season. I could see a slower start for Bama, and it's kind of holding me back from saying, yeah, I'm just going to give 34.5 points. I could see a slower start just because I think Sarkisian trying to figure out what those, you know, what the offensive pieces are going to work like this year. I think that's going to be a little bit of a tougher battle than some people are expecting. And I think there could potentially be a slow start, but to answer your question, I do think that Vegas usually accounts for that. I think that, you know, Bama usually is going to get the benefit of the doubt when it comes to, you know, anytime they face a group of five or an FCS team. It is always really interesting now because the spread has gotten to the point where, you know, if we're talking about 49, 48 points, whatever it is, like that is actually something worth watching. These games could be back and forth in that department, but especially with the year that Alabama had last year they blew teams out of the water, and that high-flying offense just kind of takes us to a new level. I think Vegas is absolutely going to account for that, and the fact that they have household names, you know, at the skill positions definitely helps them.
Well, speaking of which, so who are the five games? Which are the five games right now when you're looking at this from a point spread perspective, where you're like, I know as much about college football as anybody, this one doesn't make sense to me?
Ooh, that's a good question. So are we just talking week one, or are we talking
week
overall
one
this year?
Just week one.
Week one. Okay, so I know this is unpopular, but I think Memphis covers that 6-point spread against Ole Miss. I think Memphis is my pick this year to go to the New Year's Six as a group of five team. And I think that given how inexperienced Ole Miss is, I mean, it's the least experienced team in terms of percentage of returning production of any team in the country on the offensive side. And I think that Memphis is able to score a whole lot of points against an Ole Miss defense that's been really bad the last couple of years. And I think that 6 points to me, I'll take Memphis at home to cover that, even though they are favored, the rare group of five favored over an SEC team. And then, I don't know, I think you could look at a lot of different places. I think that Auburn is ultimately going to cover against Oregon. And I know that line has kind of gone back and forth a little bit, and there's concern about true freshmen starting a quarterback for Auburn. But I just go back to, I think Auburn's going to be so much better in the trenches than they were last year. And while Oregon might have the best offensive line in the country, at least one of them, I think that the Auburn defensive line is going to be able to put some pressure on Justin Herbert. And I think that they'll be able to cover, even if that spread was 4, I think at this point I would probably go with Auburn. I just have really, really liked the offseason that Gus Malzahn has had. I think as a play caller, I think he's going to be able to do some good things offensively. So, yeah, I mean, I'd probably look at those games. And then, you know, if we're looking around, you know, I don't think LSU is a team that I'd want to bet on week one, just because I think that with that game against Texas in week two, they're facing a triple option team. LSU is putting in a new RPO offense. It's going to be in week one. Maybe they don't want to show all the secrets to it. Covering 27.5 points just seems like a lot. And that's coming from me as somebody who's very high on the LSU offense this year. I think they'll be a top 20 offense. I love Joe Burrow, but I think covering 27.5 just seems like a bit much against the Georgia Southern team that won 10 games last year. So I do think that would be a place that I'd look. And then, yeah, look, like I do like Georgia a lot, and I'm going to be singing their praises a ton this year. 21, they're giving 21 at Vandy. I just threw out the stat on Twitter. Vivid Seats reported that Georgia fans are expected to account for 69% of the crowd at Vanderbilt on Saturday. That's going to be such a pro-Georgia crowd, and I think 21 on the road, I think Georgia covers that relatively easily. And even though, you know, I like Vandy skill players, they have a big three in Kalijah Lipscomb, Keyshawn Vaughn, and Jared Pinkney that I think are going to be really good. But I just think that Georgia dominates that defensive line, and I really think that they're able to put up a big score in that one. So those would probably be the places that I'd start at.
All right, so that's really good stuff. The biggest number this weekend amongst the top 25, it looks like it's Penn State as a 39.5-point favorite hosting Idaho. Next up, I think, is Clemson. I'm looking at the Action Network app right now, is a 37-point favorite over Georgia Tech that has a brand new coach and is trying to figure out how to no longer be, you know, an option forward offense. If you had to bet one of those games, Penn State 39.5 points over Idaho, Clemson 37 points over Georgia Tech, which one do you take? You have to bet on the favorite.
Oh, you have to bet on the favorite. I'm not betting on Penn State right now to cover. I'm not. That's way too high of a spread. I'd much rather take a team like Clemson, and that's, you know, a little bit more so. Penn State is just such a mystery offensively. I feel like people I wouldn't have Penn State in my top 25 to start the season. I think they're a complete mystery offensively. I think that what they return at the quarterback position with Sean Clifford, they feel really good about that. But you return you lose your most prolific passer in program history. I think Trace McSorley was so valuable. I mean, he's been the quarterback for every meaningful game that they've played in the last 5 years. And I just think that the loss that he'll have on that program will be significant. And I would not trust Penn State to cover a 39.5-point spread, even though it is Idaho. And even though they do have talent on the defense, of course, and I like some of their skill players. But, yeah, that just seems a bit lofty to me. I would still take Clemson to cover. I think that Clemson should be able to impose their will really at the line of scrimmage all year. I don't know who in the world is going to test them. And even though that they have you know, all those holes on the defensive line, or, you know, losing three guys like that who we didn't expect to be there even last year. I think that's something that'll, you know, come into play later in the season. But for now, yeah, give me Clemson, give me Trevor Lawrence to be able to cover pretty much any spread. I think Travis Etienne's the best running back in the country. I love Justin Ross as well, the Alabama native who, of course, torched Alabama the national championship last year. So, yeah, I would have a lot of confidence in Clemson covering. They'll be able to pour it on in a hurry.
All right, so that's also great. My last question for you. If you have to make a choice right now other than Oklahoma, Clemson, Alabama, or Michigan to make the playoff, where do you think the best value is in terms of odds?
Yeah, I'll stick with Georgia. Like, is that?
Wait, didn't I say Georgia? Did I not include Georgia? Who did I say? I thought I said Georgia, Alabama. Oh no, I said Clemson. Take Michigan out. Put Georgia in. Georgia, then, Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma.
Then I'd probably go Michigan.
Oh my God.
I'd probably go Michigan just because, you know, and I know I've said it with Georgia, I think that this is just finally set up really well for Michigan to do this. And I'm not just saying that as like a blind apologist. I don't say this every year about Michigan. I really don't. Last year I thought Wisconsin was going to come out of the Big Ten. I thought Wisconsin was going to go to the playoff. But I just think it's finally set up for Michigan. I think it's finally clicked with Harbaugh. I love the fact that he turned the entire offense over to Josh Gattis. That's one of the more underrated storylines this offseason. Josh Gattis, who, of course, spent last year as the co-offensive coordinator / wide receivers coach at Alabama, previously was a major part of rebuilding Penn State's offense along with Joe Moorhead. And I just think that with Josh Gattis in controls as the play caller, they're going to run a more modern offense, which they have needed to do for some time now. I think that they're finally going to get through. I think that, you know, predicting Ohio State is the easy thing to do probably at this point. But at the same time, I have reservations about a first-time head coach and a first-time starter at quarterback. And I think that, you know, it's been 21 years since that combination, a first-time head coach and a first-time starting quarterback, have started in the top five. I think that Michigan finally gets it done this year. I think they've learned a lot from what they went through at the end of last season. It was a very humbling experience for them after that great long winning streak last year. And I think the message finally gets through. I think Don Brown adjusts a little bit, maybe doesn't play as much man in those key games when, you know, they're facing these up-tempo offenses. And I think that Michigan finally gets it done and gets a Big Ten championship and obviously a victory against Ohio State and gets to the playoff this year.
All right, CJ O'Gara, at CJ O'Gara on Twitter. You have proven once again why people from Chicagoland and alumnus of Indiana University's Journalism School can really do it all. Because look what you did. You moved down south, and now you're a senior columnist for Saturday Down South, and you're co-hosting the Saturday Down South podcast. Great stuff. I really appreciate the insight. I appreciate the information. I appreciate you giving me bold takes in your picks for week one of college football.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Looking forward to doing it again soon, hopefully.
All right, brother. Take care.
All right, you too.
All right. This has been The Favorites from the Action Network. I want to thank my guests, as always, Bob Scucci from Boyd Gaming, bookmaker to the world, for coming on his podcast. He's on with me every week talking lines and market moves from the perspective of Las Vegas, and Connor O'Gara from SaturdayDownSouth.com, host of the Saturday Down South podcast. Follow him at CJ O'Gara. He had great stuff. Listen to the podcast, Apple Podcasts, radio.com/The Action Network, anywhere you get your podcasts. Rate, review, subscribe. Until next week, love you.